Greetings. I am Shusada Kona Kumara. Welcome to Satsang. You are beginningless. You are endless. You are divine.
Good evening, BBS family. Welcome to Satsang. This is Shusada, and I'm very, very pleased to have you with us again tonight. We'll go ahead and get started. If you'd like to take a nice deep breath, and I will clear the space. Mother, Father, God that I am, through the great central sun hierarchy, through the office of the Christ, through the order of Melchizedek, I call upon Archangel Michael to bring the sapphire blue ray. Cut away, cut away, cut away anything in all of our four lower vehicles not emanating directly from our I Am presence. I now call on Archangel Zachiel, keeper of the violet flame. Blaze, blaze, blaze the violet flame through all of our four lower bodies. Transmute, transmute, transmute all the psychic debris Michael has cut free. I now bring forth the invincible ring, pass not, and the mirror blue light of invisibility to completely surround each of us. And I call forth a shaft of pure Christ light, one to surround each one of us. And I ask that these tubes of light be brought to the center of the earth, where I call on Archangel Gabriel to seal them. And I ask that the legions of Michael completely surround each tube of light. And now I ask that our vibrations be raised high above the psychic and astral worlds to the highest realm of illumined truth we each can attain at this time. And now, Mother, Father, God, we place ourselves in service to you and to humanity. And I place myself in service to all of you tonight. We ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted into our perceptions and that all else of the lower mind be kept out. And we ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted through us. And because we have asked this, we consider it so. So be it. Okay, very good. So, those of you who are tuning in don't know a lot about us. We are located in Charlotte, North Carolina. We've got a little bit of an issue going on here in Charlotte right now. The energies are incredibly intense right now here with issues in the community. And so, I thought it would be a good night to tackle some work from that level. Basically from the space of one little sentence that summarizes a huge component. Absolutely huge, I think, is an understatement, but I don't know a better word for it. An all-encompassing component of dissolution work. And that is this, that we are not here to change anything. We are here to see through it. So we're going to base all of tonight on that. At least I think so. We'll see where it goes. The issue we've got right now here in Charlotte is that, to keep it really simple, a black man was shot by a police officer who did happen to be black as well. But it has started, in light of everything else that has happened in this country, it has started a whole issue in the city of Charlotte, concerning race, concerning the how the Black community is perceived by the official community, like the police force and all of that. And so we've had some rioting taking place here, protesting taking place, and another death yesterday due to everything that was happening. And it's gotten kind of ugly. So we, for our session here tonight in Charlotte, we kind of started from that space to look at, you know, not really why it's happening. I don't think anyone, at least anyone who'd be listening to this program, would really wonder why. It's kind of, it's overdue that it would happen, and it needs to come forward. Certainly that's a component that I think pretty much anyone who functions with a higher level of consciousness can see. All of this kind of stuff that we've been repressing as a collective, from anything race relations, sexual stuff, banking, you know, the military industrial complex, like all of it, right? All of it is stuff that we've been, there are issues that we've collectively been stuffing for a very long time, and it's all coming to a head here, and will continue to. I wouldn't expect it to back down any. But what's going on right now is you've got, you know, two opposing sides that aren't, that are really more concerned about justifying their own actions and holding true to the belief that they're supporting than they are interested in trying to see the other side and working to come to some kind of a consensus. Yeah, some kind of a middle ground, which of course would be the wise thing to do. But when you're dealing with individuals who aren't functioning from higher levels of consciousness, all they're capable of doing is what they're capable of doing, which is what the program does. It holds on to its belief, come hell or high water. That's just, and sometimes both. And that's just what it can do, right? And Megan with us was saying earlier in Charlotte, she is sensitive to the energies. So she was experiencing how much is running today and allowed it to just flow through her. So to allow herself to be utilized as a conduit for pain to move through. So she was in tears today as all this moved. And I was telling her earlier on email, I was in tears today too, for the same reason. There's a lot of pain that's, you know, really ripe here in Charlotte. And a lot of it is not being acknowledged as pain. It's coming forward as anger. So there are people who are sensitive to these things who can allow the pain to just come up through them and release through them. And it's, you know, it's a way that we can be of service. But what she was saying that was so beautiful was that at the end, when it had run its course for that time, she said all she was left with was compassion, which is a beautiful thing. Compassion being the highest human emotion that we're capable of is compassion. So that's the space that so needs to be held right now, you know, on a national level, on an international level, as other countries are watching what's going on in the States, and certainly here in our own community, that we hold compassion for both sides. It's very easy to choose a side based on the information you're given, which is never the whole story. And it takes great wisdom and humility to step back and to recognize that you, due to the nature of how you receive your information, due to the fact that you aren't part of what's running to the extent where you would be in it and see both sides, there's only so much that you can understand, right? You can understand what's been given to you, but you don't have the whole picture. And from that space, a humble person, you know, who does have a higher sight, would hold compassion for both sides, because there's obviously stuff running on both sides that isn't okay. Yeah. And we can't get into the space and allow ourselves to be attached to the space of, you know, well, this is where it started and you were the one to blame. And now because we've done this, we really are kind of blameless because you started it. Yeah. So it was like retaliation, that the person who retaliates shouldn't be blamed. And the whole thing is that, you know, one side starts as, how does it work? One side starts as the victim because there's a perpetrator. And then what always ends up happening, not always, most of the time, the one who's been victimized now becomes the perpetrator. And now the other side gets victimized. And it's this endless cycle that we will just continue to see. And somewhere in there, you know, hopefully people who would listen to me on the radio can find within themselves the compassion that says, wow, whatever it is, whatever the reason is, why ever it happened, it doesn't really matter. But my heart, in a sense, hurts for both sides that they're in the pain that they're in. Yeah. That whatever story it is that they are so identified with that has led them to experience this level of pain, I have compassion for their suffering within that. That's the greater picture, right? The greater picture isn't you're an oppressed black person in the United States of America, and gosh, don't I feel terrible for you that you're oppressed. That's not the point, because it's just a story. It's a story based on a concept that we're all holding to be real and true. Seen beyond the play of opposites, the only thing that's seen is compassion for the fact that you don't know who you are anymore. That you've completely lost sight of your own divinity. And instead have, you know, elected, in a sense, to be identified with all these stories, whatever they may be, right? Underprivileged black man being oppressed by maybe overprivileged white man. It's a story. Can we see it playing out? Sure, we can see it playing out, but it doesn't make it real. Now, I know that that's going to be, you know, people are going to love to argue with me on that one. Of course it's real. Got a guy dead now because it's real. Well, within the illusion, it seems real. Yeah. But if you listen to my program of the thousands of choices that you have to spend your time listening to a person speak, if you're one of the select few who would choose to listen to me, my message for you is very different. It's not even just to, you know, it is to hold the space of loving equanimity for both sides, certainly, but it's beyond that. And my message is, you know, we're not any of this. We're not any of this. What did Jesus mean when he said, forgive them, for they know not what they do? Why did he say that? It's the same message that I'm giving you today. We've got a collective suffering from a real hardcore case of amnesia. And this collective running around, you know, under the guise of individuation from a space of separation where everybody is doing stuff. No one really knows why. They believe they know why. No one really knows why. Everyone's just running a program. So Jesus was crucified. Of course he was. Because within the program of his time, that's what they did to people like Jesus, right? And so what did he, and I would always call him Yeshua, but people think of him as Jesus, but Yeshua, why would he say, forgive them? Forgive them, because in his world, they didn't do anything wrong. What did they do that was so bad? Other than forget who they are. In the story of taking an individual and nailing him up on a cross and leaving him there to die, It's not real. Yeshua knew that. Yeshua walked the other side. So what's he going to do? He's not going to identify with the story of the physical death going on. He sees the bigger picture, and he's trying to get you Christians to see it. Forgive them. They know not what they do. Why? Because they're unconscious. The program is unconscious. Ego as patterned consciousness knows not what it does. It's running a program. Yeshua knew what he was doing because he was awake, fully awake. Consciously elected to walk to his own physical death. Very conscious of all of it. Yeah. Not in any resistance to any of it. But in the moment of what someone would see as some terrible act that was put upon him, he's the one who stands in front of everyone and says, forgive them. He was the one, if any of them, who had the greatest reason to sit in judgment, didn't he? Right? But he didn't. So I'm giving you the same teaching, right? Yes, you can sit in your living room and you can watch what's going on in the news and you could talk to your coworkers and talk to your spouse and all of that and come up with why you think it happened and they shouldn't have done this and then that side shouldn't have done that and blah, blah, blah. It's all still just a story, right? And the saddest part of the whole story is that both sides are in pain and both sides are suffering and neither side is capable of seeing it from a different perspective, both on a worldly level and beyond. So what's the greatest thing that you, as a person who's striving for ever higher levels of awareness, what's the greatest thing for you to do? The greatest thing is to hold your center and continue to see it from the highest light that you're capable of. And I'm telling you what that is right now. I'm giving you your directive. Compassion for their confusion. Yeah. Compassion for their identification. It doesn't have to make it real for you to have compassion for where they sit. This is here's something that didn't come up earlier, but this is a real trap. I've seen a lot of people get sucked into this one, especially light workers. They get sucked into the space of once you get the understanding that none of this is real. I've seen more light workers who turn off their emotional charge concerning things happening in the world, where they'll just be very kind of apathetic even about it all. And I find that really disgusting, honestly, because if you truly have tapped in from a higher level, you do have profound compassion that brings you to tears when you see the suffering that's going on. It's only a level of denial of the mind that leads a person to cut themselves off emotionally from the humanity and the suffering within humanity. That's denial. That's not God, people. And anyone who thinks it is, you're running and you need to stop. Because the fact of the matter is the more in tune you are with your own divinity, the more some of this is actually going to hurt you. Now you aren't identified with it from the place of it being your pain, but you feel it all the same. Because collectively, that's what's sitting there. And you're the greater your capacity to extend beyond human consciousness, the more you will feel all of the energetics that come through as emotion here. Now, that's not a scary thing when you're not identified with it. It can just run and it's fine because you know it's not you. from an identified place, that seems very scary. You know, no, I don't want to get that angry, or I don't want to, you know, suffer to the point where I feel like my heart's being ripped out. But the reality of it is, it's fine when it happens. It's fine. It comes, it runs its course, and afterward it's done. Yeah. You're not changed for it. And it just was. So to hold the space of loving equanimity for all those concerned, right? Recognizing we can't know everything that's going on, recognizing who are we to judge what is going on, recognizing we can't understand the karma that's at play. So the whole out picturing here that you're walking today is strictly a projection of your imbalanced karma. That's all it is. You're walking out your actions from prior lifetimes, years before, in some cases even yesterday. But that's what you're walking out in the present moment here. So when we have groups of people who are in conflict, there's karmically something going on there, right? You can't know what that is. And who are you to judge that? Who are you to say it shouldn't happen, right? Right? In this world of imbalance, where the only thing that's trying to happen is keep everything in balance, that's the point here, right? Because everything being polarized, everything has to be held in balance since both sides are playing out. So that's what happens. You know, wherever you're holding imbalance, the other side has to come out in the manifest world. So who are we to say it shouldn't happen? Can we say it would be, you know, nicer if things were more stable? Well, sure. But who wants it to be stable? Right? It's only the ego that wants it to be stable anyway. And the reality is that outside of polarized consciousness, it doesn't matter. You remain as you are. It doesn't matter what's moving. You remain as you are. We need a, it'd be beautiful to have a world where all the societal structures were headed by, you know, councils of enlightened elders. Wouldn't that be lovely? Like it is in other systems. And used to be here, by the way, and will again. So any questions? Come on over. You have to actually speak in the microphone. Uh-oh. After you make a water mess on the rug.
Well, just the last part that you were saying about how you remain what you are. Can you just explain more about that and speak to what or who we really are?
Sure. To the best of my capacity, using language. Sure. When I say you remain as you are, okay, in the simplest way to say it would be the words that I always come back to that do define your divine nature: beginningless, endless, formless, single, being, knowledge, and bliss. That is what you are. And from the space of non-identification, that is where you sit, regardless of what's moving around you. The eternal is the eternal. Always changing and never changing simultaneously. Yeah. Does that help or does that create more confusion?
Do we ponder, like, for some, you know, someone who's not in that state of, you know, state yet, or identified with the other states, I guess, is what you would say, mm-hmm. perhaps. Then does it help to then contemplate what you're saying, or what would be helpful to get closer to that?
Actually, contemplation of that is a beautiful thing to do, and I would highly recommend that to anybody. Oddly enough, I was never actually told to do that, but it was a very natural thing for me. I would just sit in contemplation. I must have been a philosopher in another lifetime, I think, because very natural for me to just sit in contemplation. And in the beginning of my journey, it felt more like focused thought. I don't function that way now. So contemplation for me is just taking a concept and just holding it very lightly and just allowing whatever's going to present with it. But to take these words, you know, beginningless, and to really just sit with associating that with your true self, to be beginningless. And what is that? And to allow that to work its way deeper into the conscious mind. It's a very powerful thing. Yeah. And I would absolutely recommend doing that. Shoot, if you could do that every day, that would be really beautiful. Yeah. Because it will make an impact. There are these words that we use that some of them the mind won't register because it can't. And of course, I'm using words that are polarized to begin with to point to something that you can't use. I mean, language can never bring you there, but it can point to it. So, you know, to say beginningless and endless, you can get yourself around that. To say formless even, the ego won't like it, but it can conceptualize it. But there are certain parts. Knowing is one of them, I think, is very... The mind has no way of knowing what to do with the word knowing. And that's not something that will ever come until it's experienced and recognized for the experience of it. Because there's a level of it that runs for everybody, but you don't recognize it. You haven't come to your own awareness of your own knowing yet. And there's a moment for everyone where it's seen very clearly. And then, you know, so it's the combination of the light bulb moment with the duh, all kind of wrapped up into one. When you see how simple it actually is and how, you know, it's been there the whole time. Kind of like the Christ itself. It's the same moment. It's hysterical. Very simple, beautiful, and funny. Super funny. Yeah. All of this, you know, kvetching we do around wanting to get back to this state, you know, and when the state is present and consciously is awareness is there, the reality of how simple it is all pervasive, and it's just funny. It's just funny. Oh. So what do we do with this whole race relation thing? You know, what we do is we recognize it as just part of the program. The program that says there has to be a me and a you. And if there's a me and a you, one has to be on the upside and one's got to be on the downside. Because that's the program. So as a good little ego, I'm going to do everything in my power to be on the upside. Right? And if it so happens that I'm on the downside, I'm either going to fight like hell to get back on the upside, or I will give up and surrender and then just enjoy in a really sick and twisted sort of way being on the downside. And that becomes my new identifier, you know, the proverbial victim. And there's, you know, there's like, I hate to say joy in that, but for one who is highly identified with just being victimized, it works for them. Yeah. And that's where they find their satisfaction. So we'll use that word, satisfaction. There's satisfaction in being a victim. Yeah. So when you're satisfied with being a victim, even though you scream for change, do you really want change if you're satisfied with being a victim? You see? And it's just the game the ego's playing with itself. Yeah, I want change because I want to be that guy. But if I'm that guy, now I can't be this guy anymore. And I kind of like it that people feel sorry for me. Right? Yeah. And that plays out. Now, it doesn't mean anyone's conscious of it. But it does play out. This is why it always recycles back. It always comes back to where it started, you know. Victim always ends up back feeling victimized again. A savior can come in. Great. I'll feel better for a while. I can become a perpetrator. Great. That'll make me feel better for a while. But at the end of the day, it always comes back to victim. Right. And so will we see the end of, you know, protests and all of it? No. Do we need to? No. Why? Right? Ooh, that's touchy. That's touchy. Well, of course we do. Don't be ridiculous, don't we? I'm looking at Amber, you know. Do we want to live in a world of peace? Well, my world of peace is right here. It's not my problem you're not living in a world of peace. Yeah. Within my world of peace, you're at complete peace. Regardless of what you may think. But, and I'm laughing, but, and I get that you won't get it. But hear me, right? Does it need to change? No, if the program of polarization is the program of polarization and you aren't that, why are you so hell-bent on changing it? Right, Amber? Yeah? And that's a really good thing to look at, especially I'm talking to the light worker community here. And you fight harder than almost anybody to change it. Why? Why? If upon awakening you see how perfect everything is and how nothing needs to change, why would that not be your focus? Instead, we focus on creating change in the external world, knowing that it is impermanent, because the external world isn't real anyway. It's impermanent. So any change that's made can't be permanent either, right? But where can the permanent change be made? It's internal, right? So I'm talking to light workers here. Why aren't you out? Instead of getting all involved in how the world could be better, how could you be better? And I don't mean a better person conceptually. I don't mean, you know, what it is that the church has taught us or my mom taught me about being a good person. That's not what I'm talking about at all. If I say better, I mean, what are you doing on a daily basis to detach from the program of patterned consciousness? That's what I'm talking about. What are you doing to go in deeper, to unlock what's held in the unconscious level of the lower mind, where your pain is trapped from lifetimes upon lifetimes? And if you're light workers, you've got a lot of pain. Because you are the ones, lifetime after lifetime, who did stand your ground. You are the ones who were seen as heretics and rebels and all of those things. You were the ones who were burned at the stake and hung by the neck. As a collective community, there's a ton of pain trapped there. You know, the light worker community, they are, you've all come in service. You are the spiritual warriors on this planet. You aren't a bunch of wusses. You may feel like it right now, but you aren't. And so these memories of these horrendous things that have happened to all of us, they lay dormant cellularly, you know, and the pain needs to get released. So rather than let's sit in meditation and just reach for samadhi, right, and pretend that all of this stuff doesn't exist and use some spiritual understanding that says it's not real to allow us to just stay in a state of denial where all we're really trying to do is keep it stable. Let's just do that instead of going in and getting real about what's still left unbalanced and undone within us. That's the great work. You want to help this country get over this issue? Do it. Go in and do it on your own internally. Where do you have your issues? Where are you imbalanced when you look at race? Where are you imbalanced when you look at the disparity between the sexes? The disparity between sexual preference? The disparity between income levels? All of these things that are polarized, where do you stand with all of them? And be honest with yourselves. You know, don't answer it from the space of what you think you should say. Answer it from that little voice back there that knows what it wants to say. And then go in using self-inquiry and go deeper. Why? Where did I learn that? Because you learned it. You learned it, right? And if you learned it, you can throw it off as easily as you took it on, right? But in the throwing it off, it means you actually have to walk it out. Because another little piece of the teaching is that you can see it, but seeing it isn't enough to dissolve it. So if you as consciousness is this beautiful, divine, perfect creation that's been occluded by layers and layers and layers and layers of conditioning, right? All that has to happen is just to continue doing the inner work to release those layers, right? But the thing is, if you see it, that's great. You've got, you know, Justin sitting in front of me. So let's pretend Justin's got 20 coats on right now. And he could look down at himself and go, he could be like, wow, I'm so hot. Right? I'm miserable. Justin, why are you so miserable? I don't know. Well, look, what do you see? Oh my God, I've got 20 coats on. It's no wonder I'm so hot. Yeah. Now, what are you going to do with it? Well, he could sit around and complain about how hot he is. Right? But it's not going to change anything. He could walk around being like, look at me, I have 20 coats on. Do you know how hot that makes me? But it won't change it. So what does he need to do? He needs to take some kind of action. Take a coat off, right? And don't stop with one. Keep going. And so that's your spiritual work. Shed the coats. Get them off, right? That's literally all you got to do. Now I say all you have to do. It's not like it's as simple as taking off a coat, right? Let's pretend some of the coats are like, you know, glued to each other. So it makes it a little trickier. And of course, when you have multiple coats on, it's hard even to move. Yeah. Like that kid in the Christmas story when he's got his snowsuit on, his arms are stuck straight out because he's got so much stuff on. He can't put his arms on. I can't put my arms down. So that's you as that is the constriction of the ego. Yeah. Or you feel immobilized. fall down, you can't get back up. There is a greater will within you that's capable of getting back up and that's capable of taking off those coats, right? But you've got to harness it and you've got to tough it out. Megan, you had a question? Come on.
So I was just sitting there thinking that I think this is something that's perhaps easier for a light worker, if you will, to be able to understand this. But someone who maybe doesn't even know what a light worker really means, so they wouldn't classify themselves as a light worker. If it's a friend of yours and you see that this person is suffering from what's going on right now, how would you kind of approach it if they come to you and it's not necessarily that they're asking you for your advice or anything like that, but you can see that they're suffering. And, I don't know, like I just sometimes like want to be able to say something to, maybe have a light bulb go off or cause a little bit of a shift or something. And so I won't go into what I actually say, but it's just like, what would you recommend for someone who knows none of this?
Where is their suffering coming from?
I have more than one person. Either it's because the whole thing about the raging sides is upsetting. Just want justice, peace, love. And then there's, you know, maybe another viewpoint of someone who's quite identify with one of the sides. Wanting justice, wanting this, wanting that. And so you just kind of see them spinning. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know. I guess I'm just asking, what would you do?
You know, it's a really good question, but it's very case specific. So part of our work, you know, as vehicles of higher levels of understanding in the world is to use your discernment concerning who it is that you're relating to. So if you have someone who's just completely and utterly mired into the world and all the stories and has no interest in doing anything to extricate themselves from that condition, then it might just be, you know, kind of taking their hand or putting your arm around their shoulder and saying, I'm sorry, this is affecting you so much. You know, mm-hmm. It can be that. Mm-hmm. You're not wrong for doing that, even though you have an understanding that surpasses it, right? Now, there could be others who, because you would know on a situation-by-situation basis, who could maybe be receptive to hearing something you would say that comes from a deeper place. But you have to use your own discernment there, you know. For some people, it's just good to recognize that as long as you're standing in this state of wanting justice, right, and wanting peace, that on a level you have to recognize you'll never have your peace as long as you hold on to your grievance. There is no peace within grievance, you know. And then you have to get people sometimes to look deeper. And if they're identified culturally with a race, let's say, then you have to get them sometimes to look at, well, I get that that's the story that's kind of predominant within the community in general, but is it true for you? Has it been your experience? You know, Yes, your ancestors certainly walked that out, no question. But has it been yours? And what do you feel in your own world that you need vengeance for, or that you need justice for? Where is the injustice in your own world? That's your focus, not the greater community, because it's not your own experience. That's the issue, you know, with identification. When we identify as a group, is that we take others' experiences on as our own, and they aren't necessarily, you know. And we have to be careful that we don't lump ourselves in with everyone else when maybe you have, you know, you're a black person and you have great relationships. Maybe you got like 6-7 cop friends. It's not totally not your experience, you know, to have the police look at you funny or whatever. Not your experience at all. So why would you feel a need to walk that reality that someone else's just because of the color of your skin, right? And I would say this of anybody, and with all, I mean, it comes up with all my students at some point, looking at, you know, you've taken this on as a belief, but was it your experience? Or did you just take it on because it was given to you, someone else's experience, and then you just accepted it? And that's what we all do all the time. Oh, I heard so-and-so, blah, blah, blah. And you know, now you've got this whole judgment and a belief that sits under it about whatever it is. And it's like, was that your, did you get that from personal experience? No, so-and-so told me. I'm sorry. So why are you so quick to believe it to be true if it's not even yours? Right? And some of what's going on here racially is that. You know, it's not a stupid, a black and white issue. I did not mean that to be to come out that way. But, you know, the mind always wants to see everything in black and white. It can't see all the gray area in between. And it's a very gray issue, right? And it runs the gamut from those who are truly walking out the experience of being, you know, really victimized, all the way up to others who aren't experiencing any of it. They're on the complete opposite side, right? And to lump the whole community into one thing is wrong on both sides. Yeah, because it's ridiculous that we would do that. But that's the whole thing about, you know, we take great pride in our identification. And that pridefulness is not helping. And you see that all the time. People who culturally really take great pride in, I'm Irish, right? You know, we drink a lot of whiskey and do things and go to church on Sunday and we get absolved and it's cool. But that's what we do, right? Okay, great. I'm this and this is what we do, right? And I'm this, and this is what we do. Really? Okay. And whenever you hear that, whatever it is, the thing that we do, right, is just a way for the collective mind there to hold itself above others. That's all that is. That's what pride does. It holds itself above another.
And that, like, reinforces it?
It just reinforces it, yeah. Over and over and over, but from a very benevolent place, right? Mm-hmm. So, okay, so I'm married to a Native American. I have a lot of Native Americans in my point of awareness. So I've seen a lot of that story play out over the last 25 years. The story of the indigenous peoples here and what they've dealt with and the oppression that they had to walk through and how they still hang on to it, right? Even though you'll have a Native American who was born and raised off a reservation and is doing very well for themselves in the world, but still hanging on to the story of their oppression. It's not even your own experience. Why do you want to hang on to this story so badly, right? Because it identifies you as, you know, well, because I'm Indian. Well, yeah, but when's enough enough, you know? That's where I come to anyone whatever it is they're holding on to. When is enough enough? When can we say, you know, we'll look at the native peoples. Is it tragic what happened here? Absolutely. But good God, I wasn't part of it. My ancestors are Ukrainian. They didn't have anything to do with any of it, right? But you're going to hold it against me for being Caucasian, right? And from a very kind of rational place, it doesn't make sense to do that anymore. We aren't helping anybody or helping anything by doing it anymore. Now, we can have compassion for where they sit, and we can have the discussions like we need to about where are we still oppressing you within this country that was yours to begin with, and it was, right? But it has to be reciprocal. So the other side has to be willing to say, okay, you know, just like everyone in your personal work, at some point you say, okay, whatever the story was that I'm holding on to, I'm going to release it now. And it's done. Clean slate. And so everyone, when you do personal dissolution work, you have to do that. In all of your stories, there comes a point where it's like, today it's done. No more. I refuse to hold it anymore. Clean slate. And I walk forward from a new place, from my level of understandings, right? So collectively, this is what is going to have to happen on a larger scale. And as more and more people, like the people who would listen to this program, begin to wake up and do that internally for themselves, now that energy just got removed from that collective. The where it was polarized before, it just got removed. And in it getting removed, it just made it that much easier for the next person to do the same thing. And after a while, it will have a snowball effect. It'll be exponential. So it is coming. But it has to come with the people who are capable, right? Don't hold it against the people who aren't. It's not their fault. They're just not there yet. It's okay, right? It'll come when it's meant to come for them. But you are capable right now. So hold yourself accountable to that. Yeah. And function, take the high road, right? You take the high road because you can. And it is the right thing to do. Yeah. All right. PLN, where are we at? It's time. Okay. Thank you, Megan. So tonight I chose a song that I thought would be really, really fitting for meditation, given everything that is going on energetically. It's the Gayatri Mantra, sung by Satya Sai Baba, and one of my favorites. I hope you enjoy it tonight. And we will be back with you next Thursday for Satsang. Thank you so much. Good night.
Tatsavitruvarenyam Varko devasya dhimahi Diyo yona prachodaya. You are divine.